done. We are continuing our discussion on the pursuit of wisdom from the book of Proverbs. I've had a couple people ask me whatever happened to the study on the Holy Spirit. Well, that's after the first of the year. A couple things happened and life got busy. So we'll start that after the first of the year, Lord willing. I want to talk today about having the proper perspective on wealth and riches. And I know all of you, and myself included, we would not say that we are rich. I certainly don't feel rich. If you looked at the world as a whole, and you picked an average person from every country and stood them up here next to us, and we all went down the line and we talked about how much we made, how much we spent, what it took to live, I think we would all find out that we would come out in the top 5% of those people. So, you know, if you look at the world as a whole, folks, we are rich. And if you don't think that, go to some third world country sometime and walk into a grocery store and see the choices that they have of what they get to buy, and then, you know, remember that when you walk back into Kroger's or Publix next time. Certainly we spend more than most people do, and most of us would spend on a monthly basis, even on groceries, more than what a lot of people make in a month in total, what in some countries what some people make in a year. So compared with the world, we are rich. If we were all honest with ourselves, one of our secret desires would be that we would have more money. Well, let's be perfectly honest with ourselves. We're bombarded daily with images of luxury cars, houses on the tops of mountains, houses at the beach, yachts, rich clothing, all crying out to us that if only we had these things, we would be cool, or we would be happy, or we would be fulfilled. And if we're really honest with ourselves, you know, some part of us is envious with those pretty people in the ads that are living in that dream home, smiling, you know, happy, sitting on the leather sofas, driving sleek European sports sedans, to the marina where their sailboats are waiting there for them. And it places a desire in us to be rich. Now, maybe you all don't succumb to that, but, you know, I see those things and then I go, boy, that'd be really nice. And even by saying that would be really nice, I'm succumbing to that desire, that hook that it's got out there for us. And it's insidious because, you know, in a Christian's life, we see these nice things. We think, well, this would be great for the family, you know. The sailboat would be wonderful because we could have great family time on the sailboat, right? You know, the RV would be a good expense because we could all be together and we could take all these trips together. And the house in the mountains is a great investment, and so on and so on and so on. In the Christian's life, it has a possibility of building in us a lack of contentment, a feeling that somehow we're being cheated out of the good life if we don't have these things. A friend of mine and I used to joke around about buying lottery tickets because, you know, we were both good churchmen and Christians, and we talked about, you know, well, what would happen if we just bought one lottery ticket. You know, he's always daring me to buy one lottery ticket. And he says, what would happen if you bought the lottery ticket and you won $50 million? You know, tithe, that's right. But you know, you tithe on $50 million, and Dave picks this check up out of the box in the back, and he goes, ho-ho! You know, you've got to explain that check to Dave. Dave is going to go, It's a bonus. That's right. Just think of it. So Solomon was obviously a person that we could call rich. You know, even in the ancient world, he was regarded as someone who acquired much more wealth than any of the kings that were around him. But if you looked at how he looked at money and possessions in this book and in the book of Ecclesiastes, I think you would come away with it. He would tell you that it didn't make him happy. In fact, he would call it vanity and striving after wind. So today we're going to look at two passages that highlights Solomon's perspective on wealth and wisdom and how they apply to us. So turn to Proverbs 23:4. We're going to read 4 and 5. Proverbs 23:4 and 5. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings, like an eagle that flies towards the heaven. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. The word weary here means to toil. It's hard work. Toiling until you are exhausted to the point that you cannot continue. The verse here says not to weary yourself. Work yourself to the point of exhaustion to gain wealth. In the old days, to gain wealth, you had to have more fields. You know, if you had a field and you grew crops on it, even if you got a bumper crop, you'd get a little bump. But to gain wealth, you'd have to go get more fields, and you'd have to plow more land, and you'd have to grow even more crops to gain wealth. Now, today we're much more sophisticated. We need jobs that keep us in touch 24/7. We're typing away on our Blackberries. We're talking on our cell phones. We're having long commutes to work. We're checking our email at 11 o'clock at night, and so on. We can weary ourselves trying to get ahead, trying to crawl up the next rung on that ladder just so we can afford the nice house, the car, the house that was a stretch for us, and so on. Solomon says, don't weary yourself trying to gain wealth. And the next line says, cease from your consideration of it. He says, stop trying to figure out how to make this happen. Now, why do we need to stop trying to figure out how to make it work? Let's look at the next verse. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. Once you've attained it, once you've gotten to the next rung on the ladder, then poof, it takes wings and flies away. All it takes is a medical emergency, a stock market slide, some disaster, and suddenly your wealth is gone. All that you strive for, worked for, sacrificed your family life for, it's gone in an instant. And he goes on, for wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies towards the heavens. One minute is here, and another instant, and it takes wings and flies away. Gone. Now, sure, we can diversify our portfolios. We can, you know, invest smartly. We can shield ourselves from some of it. But in general, and Proverbs always is dealing in generalities, if you set your eyes on your wealth or you place your hope in your wealth, that's really what it's saying there. If you start thinking that this is going to save you from some uncomfortableness in the future that will fly away, if we place our hope in our possessions to make us happy, to fulfill our desires, then we're setting ourselves up for a great disappointment. Our enjoyment will be fleeting, and soon it will fly away. Now, what should we pursue if we're not going to pursue riches? Well, Solomon tells us over and over again in this book, pursue wisdom. Pursue a relationship with God, acknowledging our fear of Him and His holiness, prioritizing obedience to Him over meeting our own needs with our selfish desires. If you read this book, you understand that our relationship to Him, if it's proper, will build in us wisdom. If we have proper relationships with our fellow man, humility, generosity, living with hands open instead of hands closed, that's the key to happiness. And I think Solomon's saying, if you're living, looking at your fat bank account and thinking this is going to make you happy, you're going to be disappointed. Your hopes and your dreams will fly away, never be seen again. So is this verse a license to sit around and say, well, I don't really need to worry about many. I'm just going to kind of take it easy and take what life comes, what life gives to me. And I don't think that's true. We studied diligence, and Solomon says that you must be diligent. You must work hard. We've got to live lives of righteousness and diligence. So you obviously, you know, there are no lines here. It's not like Solomon paints a line down here and says, okay, you can work up to this line, but as soon as you get to this line, if you step over that line, you're working too hard. There are no lines. There are no guidelines of working only 40 hours a week, taking the 8 designated holidays, 3 weeks of vacation. God wants us to examine our lives on a daily basis. He wants us to look at our lives and our motives and to ask ourselves the question, is this enough? Have I worked enough to get it done? Am I being diligent? Am I doing too much? Am I working too hard? Because only we can ask that question based on what needs to get done. How much is enough for you? Notice that the answer will be different based on who you are and where you are in your life. You know, where we are right now, we've got 2 in college, 1 heading to college next year. You know, our needs are different than Nathan and Courtney's. So there's no one answer. God doesn't say, you know, here's the box, stay in the box and you'll be fine. We get to wander around and we get to say, well, is this enough? How about over here? We need to examine ourselves. God leaves us in tension so that we will depend on Him. We will understand that our dependence on Him is what is important. And so we constantly need to be looking at ourselves, you know, am I where I should be? Examining ourselves and our motives. When do I stop depending on God to provide for me and start thinking that it's up to me? Solomon had a great perspective on material goods. Let's look at another passage that deals with this question. Turn to Proverbs 30, 8 and 9. Just a couple pages over. Proverbs 30, 8 and 9. Actually, we'll start reading back in verse 7, because that's where the thought starts. 2 things I have asked of you. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep deception and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion, that I may not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or that I may not be in want and steal and profane the name of my God. Now this is a prayer. Solomon is talking to God. He's modeling for us the way we should pray if we want to have a life of wisdom. Lord, please keep deception and lies far from me. Don't let me deceive myself, which is very easy to do about this. I don't know if you've noticed that or not. Don't let me lie to myself about this very important topic. Keep me honest. Let me deal with myself honestly. Let me judge my heart rightly. Now, what do we need honesty about? You know, and he says here, give me neither poverty nor riches. Lord, don't let me be in either one of these camps. And he's kind of, we've got the spectrum here. We've got the really poor people over here. We've got the really rich people over here. He says, don't let me be in either one of these extremes. Don't let me be in poverty. Don't let me be in want of my next meal. Don't let me be constantly worried and scrounging for how I'm going to get by tomorrow. And he says, don't let me be over here either. I don't want to be rich. I don't want to have everything I want. I don't want that either. He says, feed me with the food that is my portion. Now, we had Thanksgiving 3 days ago, and, you know, I think if we took a poll, we all ate way more than we need to. But Solomon, in effect, is saying, don't give me just a little bite of food, okay? One little morsel that isn't enough. And he's saying, don't give me 3 platefuls either. I don't need that. He's saying, I just want my portion. Now, this word portion is an interesting word. It's translated statute in most of the Old Testament. It means what is right or what is due to someone. He's asking for what is due to him. No more and no less. When we sit down at the table, we can pretty much tell if someone is taking more than their share, okay? If the plate of turkey comes by on Thanksgiving, okay, and you just take that plate and you just scrape it all onto your plate, and, you know, everyone's watching the turkey coming around, right, because you haven't had yours yet, and all of a sudden, all the turkey is on this one guy's plate. Now that, you know, people would kind of go, wait a second. You can kind of tell when people are taking more than their portion, right? And the same's true on the other extreme. If the plate comes by and the person doesn't take any, and the plates keep coming by and they don't take any, you're going to wonder what's going on with this person. Are you feeling okay? Is there something wrong? Someone eats way too much, it's not good for them. It's going to make them sick. It's going to make them fat and bloated, as we all well know. And if someone doesn't eat enough, they're going to get malnourished. They're not going to get the sustenance that they need. Solomon asks for the portion that is his due. Just give me my portion. He doesn't want more and he doesn't want less. And he knows the dangers on both ends of the spectrum. And that's what he talks about in the following verse. He says that I may not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? He says, if I get way out here in the rich end of the spectrum, he says, my tendency is that I'm going to deny you and say, who is the Lord? Who needs God? Because I've got everything I need out here. We start to enjoy the good life a little too much. We start thinking that it's due to our hard work that got us there, our intelligence. And, you know, we say, you know, I got myself here. Wasn't I smart? You know, this is, I did this. We become arrogant and boastful and proud, and we lose our dependence on God. We got everything we need. What do we need God for? Who is the Lord? Now, material possessions have always been a snare. Turn back to Deuteronomy 8:11. This is a warning from God. Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law, right before the nation of Israel entered the promised land. Deuteronomy 8:11. And this is a warning that God gave to the nation of Israel. They were essentially going to inherit fields they didn't clear, houses they didn't build, a land flowing with milk and honey. Let's start reading in verse 11. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness he fed you with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand have made this wealth. But, he's saying, this is what you should do. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And he goes on to say that if it comes about that you forget the Lord your God, if you go down that road, he says in verse 19, I testify against you today that you shall surely perish. And we know from 2020 hindsight that that's what happened. They got into the land and they forgot the Lord. So you hear the warning here. It's the same one that's spoken in the book of Proverbs. If you get a bunch of stuff, watch out. Because you'll become arrogant and say to yourself, look what I did. Lots of material possessions can cause us to lose our dependence on God. That cause us to think that we don't need him and his provision for our lives. And it's subtle. You would never say to yourself, I don't need God. But you work yourself into that mindset. Now, the opposite end of the spectrum can be just as bad. Solomon says that if I'm poor, then I might turn to stealing and profane the name of the Lord. Now, if we're in want, we have several wrong turns that we can make. We can be discontent, meaning that we're constantly looking at what we have versus what other people has. And we could get discontent. We can start grumbling. Well, this is wrong. They have more than I do. Look at this. I'm having trouble paying the bills, just getting by. And look at these people over here. You can become discontent. We become angry and we become bitter towards God because we don't have what the Joneses have. And it leads us to be ungrateful for what we have. Now, this is the mode that most of us wind up in when we get in lean times. Most of us don't turn to shoplifting and stealing. But we can be discontent with where God has us. Instead of asking him why he has us in these circumstances, instead of being grateful for what we have and growing through that process, we're more likely to ask, why is he being so unfair to me? And again, we might not say that out loud, but you might say it to yourself in the middle of the night when you can't pay the bills. So another blind alley we can run down is that we can turn to dishonest gain. We can cheat on our taxes. We can get involved in questionable marketing schemes. And we can turn to outright stealing. We can say, well, you know, this thing at work, I've worked hard here. These people are not really grateful for all the wonderful things I've done for them, so I'm just going to take this. And we justify it in our heads. Now, obviously, when the children of God wander down this road, we are doing what Solomon says here. We are profaning the name of God. If we are called by the name Christian, we profane the name of Christ if we turn to dishonest gain, and the world knows what's going on. So Solomon asks God to give me only the portion that is due me. Don't put me out here in either of these camps. Not too much, because he might forget God and become arrogant and proud. And not too little, because he might become discontent or steal and profane the name of God. So the question for you today is, how much is enough for you? Our perspectives are shaped by what we're used to and by what the society and the images that are placed before us. If we're all given a glimpse of how our great-grandparents lived 100 years ago, with no electricity in most cases there was no central heat, no cars, no phones, no internet. Most of us would say things like, boy, how primitive. This is primitive. Look at these people. They're just barely scraping by here. And yet those that came before us lived happy lives. I think if we, jumped in a time machine and went back there and asked them, I think they would say very much the same things that you and I would say if someone asked us. This is a good life. I think they were able to have a relationship with their God. They were able to provide for their family. It's just that all the stuff that we think we need, we think that because everyone else has them. I'm not suggesting we all go back to log cabins and wood stoves, but I bring it up to illustrate that what we think we need is a consequence of the society we live in. Do we really need what we think we need? Now, we could launch into a whole discussion about what life was like without cell phones. Just think back 10 years, 15 years. You had to pull over and find a payphone. Remember the payphones? The older ones of us do. You don't see many pay phones nowadays. They don't pay for themselves anymore. You couldn't call someone and just ask them a question. I am constantly getting phone calls from the house, just questions. And we're out on a walk, and the girls will call and ask Carol, well, when should we put the green beans on? You had to wait for people to get someplace and call them, or you had to wait for them to come home and then listen to their cassette answering machine and, get their message, and then they'd call you back. It would take hours to get a hold of people. And we didn't have this, idea that I can just ring someone up and ask them this very simple question. So modern conveniences turn themselves into needs very quickly. Now, someone who doesn't have a cell phone, does anybody know somebody who doesn't have a cell phone? We all know people who don't have cell phones. We think they are like from the 18th century or something, right? What's wrong with this person? I can't call them up and ask them something right now. I need to know right now. Well, enough about that. Each of us has to ask the question, how much is enough? Am I making myself weary to gain wealth, to sustain a lifestyle that is more than I need? Do I place my hope in my bank account or my investment account or my 401k? Am I mortgaging my future so that I can keep up appearances? Am I living a lifestyle beyond my means? And these are all tough questions, but they're answers. They're questions that we need to ask ourselves. When is enough enough?
I think we have to realize too that answer is different for every one of us.
Oh, absolutely.
This passage that says, "Feed me with the food that is my portion." The amount that's too much for me to handle when I would become arrogant. Different from the amount that someone else could be an effective steward of.
Absolutely.
And so, we may not like the answer. It may be that I just can't handle anymore, and that's why God just won't let it happen.
Yeah.
Or some people may have a measure of grace to live well with a lot less than I can deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And that person may be a lot more holy than the guy who thinks God's on my side because I'm wealthy.
Yep.
Well, you may not be nearly as holy as that guy who knows how to live paycheck to paycheck and trust God. But God has made us different, and we can handle different amounts of money. And wherever we are, we need to be willing to receive that from His hand. The food that is my portion,
right,
I can handle, is just different from what somebody else can handle. And we start looking at everybody else and going, well, why didn't you do that to me? Well, maybe you couldn't handle that. Or maybe you can handle this, and he couldn't. You don't need to do the comparing. You don't know which one it is.
That's right. Wouldn't it be much easier if, you know, if there was outlined in here, let's turn to First Chris Carlisle and see, okay, this is enough for Chris, okay? Let's turn to, you know, Second Colin. And Colin, do you really need the 12-megapixel digital camera? You know, there are no guidelines, okay? There's no lines. God leaves it all very vague and gray. And I think He wants each of us to ask ourselves the question, because Dave's right. The answer for Colin is different from the answer for Rodney and the answer for Chris. Because God gives us grace differently based on who we are and where we've been, where He has us in the process. He may take us through a lean time for a purpose, to grow us up in Him. So He might say, you know, Ronnie, I need you to go through a lean time because of growth that I need to build into your life. So we really can't compare. It's built into us. It's our human nature to compare. God says, no, you can't do that. You deal with me. Where should I be? Now, lest any of us console ourselves that this is an Old Testament concept and doesn't apply to us, let's turn in our Bibles to 1 Timothy 6:6. I am one of those people that does have books of the Bible with my name on it. First Timothy 6:6, we'll read through verse 19. But, Godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But flee from these things, you men of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. Take hold of the eternal life to which you've been called, and you made the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. And he goes on to give him further charges. We'll stop there. The context here, if you look back towards verse 5, is he's talking about false teachers who are promoting the idea that godliness is a, that you can derive gain, okay, physical gain from the church, okay? These people were much like the Robert Tiltons of our age, who said that, yes, if you just have a right relationship with God, God is going to open the windows of heaven and pour down this stuff on you, and you'll have everything you want. In this case, these guys were actually enriching themselves off of the flock. They were saying, you know, you can actually make money on this. It's really a pretty cool deal. And Paul is saying, no, no, no. These guys have it backwards. Godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by, and here's this word, contentment. Now we could teach several weeks on that single verse. Paul uses the language of the false teachers, but he turns it around and he says, godliness is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. If we can gain contentment, if it's something we can attain to, if we can say, this is enough for me, I don't need this other thing, then godliness gains us much. And verse 7 and 8 give us a great perspective on material needs. We haven't brought anything into this world, and we're not going to take any of it out. We don't get to take our huge investment account with us in the coffin when it's time for us to go in the ground. And I think Paul understood this kind of life very well. He says, if we have food and covering with these, we'll be content. We'll be satisfied with this. Now, this word contentment can also be translated as having a sufficiency. It's enough. I don't need more. Now, what a freedom it is when we gain contentment, when all of this stuff floats by our eyes and we can look at it and say, I don't need that. That's not something I need. I have enough. And it's not just about keeping the money in your pocket. It's about the attitude. It's about the heart. It's about the gratitude that you have for what you have. Now, verses 9 and 10 speak about the issue we saw in Proverbs. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare. And that word snare there is exactly that. It's a trap. It's like the they used to catch birds in a snare. They would make this thing that when the birds flew in there, when the birds tried to fly out again, you know, they get tangled up in this wire, and they wouldn't be able to get out. It's a trap. It's a snare. And he says, wanting to get rich is like that. You want to get rich, you might have great motives going in, but you're going to get snared, you're going to get entrapped, you're going to get tangled up. Now, the desires that builds up in us, he calls them foolish, which is lacking in sense or wisdom, and he calls them harmful. Something that would injure us. These desires plunge men into destruction and ruin. And that doesn't sound like something we'd sit down and put on our list of goals for our life. You know, okay, be a good husband, be a good father, plunge into destruction and ruin. You know, that's not something we would set out to do. But he says this is going to happen. If you have those desires, that's where you're going to end up. Notice that it's not the riches itself that leads to destruction and ruin. It's the desires of riches that leads to destruction. It's like Dave said, you know, some people may be able to handle riches and be good stewards of that. It's the desire. It's the saying, I want that. It's not the having. It says that some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And this word griefs is sorrows. It's not a happy place to wind up. So to sum up, wisdom dictates that we view possessions in a proper light. That we not spend our life and our energies trying to get more and more. Because when we place our hope in it, it flies away. Wisdom dictates that we ask only for our portion. Only for what we need. And that requires us to ask the question daily, how much is enough? Excess stuff can cause us to become arrogant and to forget God and to lose our dependence on Him. And being in want can cause us anger and bitterness. And it can cause us to steal and profane God's name. Let me read you a story here real quick and then we'll finish. There was once a rich industrialist disturbed to find a fisherman sitting idly by his boat. And he asked, why aren't you out there fishing? Because I've caught enough fish for today, came the reply. Why don't you go out and catch more fish than you need? Asked the rich man. The fisherman said, well, why would I want to do that? The guy says, you could earn more money and buy a better boat so you could go deeper and catch more fish. You could purchase nylon nets, catch even more fish, and make more money. Soon you'd have a fleet of boats and be rich like me. Then what would I do? Asked the fisherman. You could sit down and enjoy life. What do you think I'm doing now? The fisherman replied. So, I am out of time. So we will not ask any questions. You get to ask yourselves the questions, okay? Let me pray for us.